Chapter 112. In the dark, there was no sleep for Bradley Headstone on that night, when Eugene Rayburn turned so easily in his bed. There was no sleep for little Miss Peacher. Bradley consumed the lonely hours, and consumed himself in haunting the spot where his careless rival lay a-dreaming. Little Miss Peacher wore them away in listening for the return home of the master of her heart, and in sorrowfully presaging that much was amiss with him. Yet more was amiss with him than Miss Peacher's simply arranged little workbox of thoughts, fitted with no gloomy and dark recesses, could hold. For, the state of the man was murderous. The state of the man was murderous, and he knew it. More. He irritated it, with a kind of perverse pleasure akin to that which a sick man sometimes has in irritating a wound upon his body. Tied up all day with his disciplined show upon him, subdued to the performance of his routine of educational tricks, encircled by a gabbling crowd, he broke loose at night like an ill-tamed wild animal. Under his daily restraint, it was his compensation, not his trouble, to give a glance towards his state at night, and to the freedom of its being indulged. If great criminals told the truth which, being great criminals, they do not, they would very rarely tell of their struggles against the crime. Their struggles are towards it. They buffet with opposing waves, to gain the bloody shore, not to recede from it. This man perfectly comprehended that he hated his rival with his strongest and worst forces, and that if he tracked him to Lizzie Hexham, his so doing would never serve himself with her, or serve her. All his pains were taken, to the end, that he might incense himself with the sight of the detested figure in her company and favor, in her place of concealment. And he knew as well what act of his would follow if he did, as he knew that his mother had borne him. Granted that he may not have held it necessary to make express mention to himself of the one familiar truth any more than of the other. He knew equally well that he fed his wrath and hatred, and that he accumulated provocation and self-justification, by being made the nightly sport of the reckless and insolent Eugene. Knowing all this, and still always going on with infinite endurance, pains, and perseverance, could his dark soul doubt whither he went? Baffled, exasperated, and weary, he lingered opposite the temple gate, when it closed on Rayburn and Lightwood, debating with himself should he go home for that time or should he watch longer. Possessed in his jealousy by the fixed idea that Rayburn was in the secret, if it were not altogether of his contriving, Bradley was as confident of getting the better of him at last by sullenly sticking to him, as he would have been, and often had been, of mastering any piece of study in the way of his vocation, by the like slow persistent process. A man of rapid passions and sluggish intelligence, it had served him often, and should serve him again. The suspicion crossed him as he rested in a doorway with his eyes upon the temple gate, that perhaps she was even concealed in that set of chambers. It would furnish another reason for Rayburn's purposeless walks, and it might be. He thought of it and thought of it, until he resolved to steal up the stairs, if the gatekeeper would let him through, and listen. So, the haggard head suspended in the air flitted across the road, like the specter of one of the many heads erst hoisted upon neighboring temple bar, and stopped before the watchman. The watchman looked at it, and asked, "Who for?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Rayburn. Apostrophe, it's very late. Apostrophe, he came back with Mr. Lightwood, I know, near upon 2 hours ago. But if he has gone to bed, I'll put a paper in his letterbox. I am expected." Apostrophe, the watchman said no more, but opened the gate, though rather doubtfully. Seeing, however, that the visitor went straight, and fast in the right direction, he seemed satisfied. The haggard head floated up the dark staircase, and softly descended nearer to the floor outside the outer door of the chambers. The doors of the rooms within appeared to be standing open. There were rays of candlelight from one of them, and there was the sound of a footstep going about. There were two voices. The words they uttered were not distinguishable, but they were both the voices of men. In a few moments the voices were silent, and there was no sound of footstep, and the inner light went out. If Lightwood could have seen the face which kept him awake, staring and listening in the darkness outside the door as he spoke of it, he might have been less disposed to sleep through the remainder of the night. Not there, apostrophe said Bradley, but she might have been. Apostrophe the head arose to its former height from the ground, floated down the staircase again, and passed on to the gate. A man was standing there, in parley with the watchman. Oh! Apostrophe said the watchman. Here he is. Apostrophe, perceiving himself to be the antecedent, Bradley looked from the watchman to the man. This man is leaving a letter for Mr. Lightwood, apostrophe the watchman explained, showing it in his hand, and I was mentioning that a person had just gone up to Mr. Lightwood's chambers. It might be the same business perhaps? No, apostrophe said Bradley, glancing at the man, who was a stranger to him. No, apostrophe the man assented in a surly way. My letter it's wrote by my daughter, but it's mine is about my business, and my business ain't nobody else's business. Apostrophe, as Bradley passed out at the gate with an undecided foot, he heard it shut behind him, and heard the footstep of the man coming after him. Excuse me, apostrophe said the man, who appeared to have been drinking, and rather stumbled at him than touched him, to attract his attention. But might you be acquainted with the Tother governor? With whom? Asked Bradley. With, returned the man, pointing backward over his right shoulder with his right thumb, the Tother governor? I don't know what you mean. Why look here, hooking his proposition on his left hand fingers with the forefinger of his right. There's two governors, ain't there? One and one, two lawyer Lightwood, my first finger, he's one, ain't he? Well, might you be acquainted with my middle finger, the Tother? I know quite as much of him, said Bradley, with a frown and a distant look before him, as I want to know. Cried the man. Who're Tother governor? I am of your way of thinking. Don't make such a noise at this dead hour of the night. What are you talking about? Look here, Totherist governor, replied the man, becoming hoarsely confidential. The Tother governor he's always joked his jokes agin me, owing, as I believe, to my being a honest man as gets my living by the sweat of my brow. Which he ain't, and he don't. What is that to me? Totherist governor, returned the man in a tone of injured innocence, if you don't care to hear no more, don't hear no more. You begun it. You said, and likewise showed pretty plain, as you weren't by no means friendly to him. But I don't seek to force my company, nor yet my opinions on no man. I am a honest man, that's what I am. Put me in the dock anywhere I don't care where and I says, my lord, I am a honest man. Put me in the witness box anywhere I don't care where, and I says the same to his lordship, and I kisses the book. I don't kiss my coat cuff, I kisses the book. It was not so much in deference to these strong testimonials to character, as in his restless casting about for any way or help towards the discovery on which he was concentrated, that Bradley Headstone replied. You needn't take offense. I didn't mean to stop you. You were too loud in the open street, that was all. Totherist governor, replied Mr. Riderhood. Mollified and mysterious, I know what it is to be loud, and I know what it is to be soft. Naturally I do. It would be a wonder, if I did not, being by the christened name of Roger, which took it arter my own father, which took it from his own father, though which of our family first took it natural I will not in any ways mislead you by undertaking to say. And wishing that your health may be better than your looks, which your inside must be bad indeed, if it's on the footing of your out. apostrophe, startled by the implication that his face revealed too much of his mind, Bradley made an effort to clear his brow. It might be worth knowing what this strange man's business was with Lightwood, or Rayburn, or both, at such an unseasonable hour. He set himself to find out, for the man might prove to be a messenger between those two. "You call at the temple late, apostrophe," he remarked, with a lumbering show of ease. "Wish I may die, apostrophe," cried Mr. Riderhood, with a hoarse laugh, "if I weren't a goin' to say the self same words to you, totherest governor." "Apostrophe, apostrophe, it chanced so with me, apostrophe," said Bradley, looking disconcertedly about him. "And it chanced so with me, apostrophe," said Riderhood. "But I don't mind telling you how. Why should I mind telling you? I'm a deputy lock keeper up the river, and I was off duty yesterday, and I shall be on tomorrow. Apostrophe, yes? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, and I come to London to look arter my private affairs. My private affairs is to get appointed to the lock as reglar keeper at fust hand, and to have the law of a busted low bridge steamer which drowned of me. I ain't a goin' to be drowned, and not paid for it." Apostrophe, Bradley looked at him, as though he were claiming to be a ghost. "The steamer, apostrophe," said Mr. Riderhood, obstinately, "run me down and drowned of me. Interference on the part of other parties brought me round, but I never asked them to bring me round, nor yet the steamer never asked them to it. I mean to be paid for the life as the steamer took." Apostrophe, was that your business at Mr. Lightwood's chambers in the middle of the night? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Bradley, eyeing him with distrust. "That and to get a writing, to be first-hand lock keeper. A recommendation in writing being looked for, who else ought to give it to me? As I says in the letter in my daughter's hand, with my mark put to it to make it good in law, who but you, Lawyer Lightwood, ought to hand over this here certificate, and who but you ought to go in for damages on my account agin the steamer? For, as I says under my mark, I have had trouble enough along of you and your friend. If you, Lawyer Lightwood, had backed me good and true, and if the toter governor had took me down correct, I says under my mark, I should have been worth money at the present time, instead of having a barge load of bad names chucked at me, and being forced to eat my words, which is a unsatisfying sort of food whatever a man's appetite. And when you mention the middle of the night, totherest governor, apostrophe," growled Mr. Riderhood, winding up his monotonous summary of his wrongs, "throw your eye on this here bundle under my arm, and bear in mind that I'm a-walking back to my lock, and that the temple laid upon my line of road." Apostrophe, Bradley Headstone's face had changed during this latter recital, and he had observed the speaker with a more sustained attention. "Do you know, apostrophe," said he, after a pause, during which they walked on side by side, "that I believe I could tell you your name, if I tried?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, prove your opinion, apostrophe," was the answer, accompanied with a stop and a stare. "Try. Apostrophe, your name is Riderhood." "Apostrophe, I'm blessed if it ain't, apostrophe," returned that gentleman. "But I don't know yarn." "Apostrophe, that's quite another thing, apostrophe," said Bradley. "I never supposed you did." Apostrophe, as Bradley walked on meditating, the rogue walked on at his side muttering. The purport of the muttering was, "That rogue Riderhood, by George, seemed to be made public property on now, and that every man seemed to think himself free to handle his name, as if it was a street pump." Apostrophe, the purport of the meditating was, "Here's an instrument. Can I use it?" Apostrophe, they had walked along the Strand, and into Pall Mall, and had turned uphill towards Hyde Park Corner, Bradley Headstone waiting on the pace and lead of Riderhood, and leaving him to indicate the course. So slow were the schoolmaster's thoughts, and so indistinct his purposes, when they were but tributary to the one absorbing purpose, or rather when, like dark trees under a stormy sky, they only lined the long vista at the end, of which he saw those two figures of Rayburn and Lizzie on which his eyes were fixed, that at least a good half mile was traversed, before he spoke again. Even then, it was only to ask, "Where is your lock?" Apostrophe apostrophe, 20 mile and odd, call it 5 and 20 mile and odd, if you like upstream, apostrophe, was the sullen reply. "How is it called?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Plashwater Weir Mill Lock. Apostrophe, suppose I was to offer you 5 shillings, what then? Apostrophe apostrophe, why then, I'd take it, apostrophe, said Mr. Riderhood. The schoolmaster put his hand in his pocket, and produced 2 half-crowns, and placed them in Mr. Riderhood's palm, who stopped at a convenient doorstep to ring them both, before acknowledging their receipt. "There's one thing about you, Totherist Governor," apostrophe said Riderhood, faring on again, "as looks well and goes fur. You're a ready money man. Now," apostrophe, when he had carefully pocketed the coins on that side of himself which was furthest from his new friend, "what's this for?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "for you." Apostrophe, "why, oh course I know that," apostrophe said Riderhood, as arguing something that was self-evident. "Oh course I know very well as no man in his right senses would suppose as anything would make me give it up a gin, when I'd once got it. But what do you want for it?" Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.